Have we got some great sportsmen here tonight? Josh, I can see that. I shared with the guys this morning, and I know looking at me now, you would find this hard to believe, but at school I was not a great sportsman. In latter years I've developed this amazing physique, so much so that recently I was playing tennis against my wife, and I was two sets, I think I was two games down in the first set. Oh, that's all right, you know, great sportsmen can always come back from any situation. So anyway, I had her, I was up on her serve, I was up. I think it was love 30 to me, 30 me, love her. And she hits this wide ball, and I, it was, well, yeah, there you go. But the great sportsmen, they're not overcome by that. So I took off, I powered off on my left leg to get to this ball, and all of a sudden, down I went in a screaming heap. And I heard this audible bang. And I looked around to see, I thought, somebody is hiding in the bushes behind the tennis court and they've just thrown a hammer at me. I thought, I could have an enemy or two in this world, but I didn't think anybody would be that keen to drive all the way up to Beaconsfield, of all places, where we were playing tennis, and hide in the bush and throw a hammer at me. Anyway, I looked on the court and there was no hammer there. And then I thought, well, maybe a piece of steel dropped out of the sky. And I looked up, there was nothing there. So I realised what happened is this incredibly fit, athletic body of mine had actually let go. My calf muscle tore. It tore and it actually went bang, and I went down in a screaming heap, and it was all very painful, and I'm only just starting to get over it. I can't even stand. Like, look at this. You know, like, I can do that on that foot, on that leg, on this one. This one, look, I can't even. Oh, look at that. I can't. That's as much as I can do. So anyway, but at school, and I love sport, but I just really wasn't that good at it. Can we have a look? I want to look at a video clip now of somebody who is a fantastic sportsman. Let's have a look. The thing about Juddie and people like him, Gary Ablett and Buddy Franklin and all these guys that are absolute out-and-out champions is they're always in the game. And Chris Judd particularly, who's a midfielder and is really a playmaker, is somebody that is in the play. And you just can't keep them out of the game. They're always in the game. Now, unlike when I started to play football, I found myself really keen, and I'd be sort of running around, you know, and the ball would be here, and you know, you're wanting to get in the game, but for whatever reason, you never seem to be able to be where the ball was. Now, the ball was always somewhere else, and you were sort of running along a little bit behind the ball, and you couldn't quite get in the game. There was a friend of mine, and he was just one of those great sportsmen. Didn't matter what he did, he was fantastic at it. Wouldn't have mattered whether it was table tennis or lawn bowls. He would win every time, the running, and I played soccer with him for years. And, the thing about the difference between him and me is he was always in the game, and I was sort of trying to get in the game. And I was often on the bench, but he was always in the game. And have you ever felt like that a little bit in life? Like the stuff that goes on, the stuff that you'd like to be involved in, the stuff that you want to get into, but you just sort of can't quite get in the game. It feels like it's all happening somewhere else. You're standing here, and what you're needing to get into is over here, and you find yourself not being able to get into the game. And I want to look at some things tonight about how we can actually get in the game. Not how we can not just go through life, allowing life to unfold, allowing things to happen, but how we can be in the game. You see, the God that I serve, the God that I believe in, the Jesus that died for me and set me free, wants us to live a life where we are involved, where we are engaged, where we're part of the game. He didn't say, John 10:10, and you guys hear me quote this many times, it says, Jesus said, I've come that you might have life and have it abundant. He didn't actually say, I've come that you're going to have a life where you sit back and watch other people do it. Where you have a life and you can sit back on the TV and watch the Chris Judds of this world carving it up. He said, I have come that you would have life and have it to the full or have it abundant or have a life where you live. Have a life where you live and you are in the game. And that's the sort of life I want to live. I want to be living a life that's in the game. If I'm going to serve a God, if I'm going to live for something, if I'm going to lead a church, whatever I do, I want to be in the game. I don't want to be watching it go past. I want to be there. I want to be involved. I want to be doing what is in front of me to do. So I've got a few points here on being in the game. So the first point tonight is focus on position, not possession. Focus on position, not possession. You see, Chris Judd takes possession of the ball because he knows what position to be in. He's one of those guys that is able to read the play of the ball. He runs into space and he finds himself with possession because he's actually looking at position much more than he's looking at possession. Now, I want to read to you what I think is one of the more bizarre things that I've come across in the Bible. I was only reading it this morning in my daily reading. And this is about King David. And it says this. It says, Satan rose up against Israel and caused David to take a census of the people of Israel. Now, what's wrong with that? This guy's a king. And he wanted to count how many people lived in his country. And that seems to be a fair enough sort of thing to do, doesn't it? Like if you look at our country, if the government want to plan for our future, if they want to plan infrastructure, if they want to do those sorts of things, well, they sort of want to know how many people live in Australia. They want to know what the trends are. They want to know what the demographics are like. They want to know where immigration's coming from. They want to know where people are going to live so that they can plan infrastructure. And you'd think that, well, that's fair enough for a king. So David did that. It says, Satan rose up against Israel and caused David to take a census of the people of Israel. So David said to Joab and the commanders of the army, take a census of all the people in Israel from Beersheba to the south into Dan to the north and bring me the report so that I may know how many there are. But Joab replied, my lord, may the Lord increase the number of the people 100 times over, but why, my lord, O king, do you want to do this? Are they not your servants? In other words, this Joab, he was a wild man, Joab. He was an amazing army commander. He sometimes didn't always do what he was told, but he was an amazing military tactician. He wasn't scared of anything. He would go after anyone that David asked him to go after. And then he looks David in the eye and he says, David, why are you doing this? You know that God doesn't actually want you to get a big head. He doesn't want you to think about how many people you've got. He doesn't want you to be focused on actually what you have. He wants us to be focused on who our source is, who our supply comes from. And he says, may this army, may this nation of ours increase 100 times. May it continue to grow. May it continue to thrive. But we don't have to worry about what we've got. We don't have to worry about what we've got in our possession. All we've got to do is realize that the God that we serve is the God of all supply, and he will give us what we need. And you see, what actually happened with David there, his focus shifted. His focus shifted from the fact that everything that he had come through serving a God. Everything that he was the same guy as a teenager who looked a giant in the eye and threw a stone and hit him fair in the middle of the head and knocked him out, and then he ran up and pulled a sword out and cut the guy's head off. This was a guy that held a whole nation in contempt. And there was only one reason he could do that, because he knew where his strength came from. He knew who was on his side. He knew what he had. He actually didn't say, yeah, well, I've got all this stuff so I can win. You see, we need to focus much more on our position than what's in our possession. In other words, we focus on getting in the right position before God rather than the possession. And if in 2 Chronicles there, where I was reading from, if you go down a little bit further, it says in verse 7, it says, God was displeased with the census. God was actually very displeased with the census, and he punished Israel for it. And if you read on, you find out that you see, we live under a time called grace. They didn't live under a time called grace. And mostly when things happened, there were consequences for what they did. And he said to David, actually, you're going to have to pay for this. There is no way that you can do what you've done and there won't be consequences. And he gave David three choices. He said, well, you can either the enemies can come in and attack you for a period and you're just going to have to wear that. Or there can be a famine in the land. I think that was going to last something like 3 years. Or he said there will be a there will be a disease that will actually come in, and it's going to kill a whole lot of people. And it wasn't, none of them were good things. And I think David just went for the one that was going to be out of the way the quickest. And he took that, and there was thousands and thousands of people died with this disease that came in. And it was just a really sad thing, because somebody moved their focus much more from the position that they had before God onto the possession. In other words, what they had in their hand. And we've got to realize that tonight I'm going to give us the opportunity to be involved in a miracle offering. And I don't want you to give out of possession. I don't want you to give out of what you have. I don't want you to give out of the fact, well, I've got this. I want you to give out of a heart position before God. I want you to give because you're in a position where you're saying, I want to move into a position of faith where God is my supply. 2 Corinthians verse 8, we've got Paul, and he's talking about these guys called the Macedonians. And he's speaking to some other guys called the Corinthians. Now, the Macedonians were poor. They were seriously poor. They didn't have a lot going for them. They weren't on a trade route. They didn't have a lot there. Their land was barren. It didn't grow good food. And they were just poor people. And if we look in 2 Corinthians verse 8, he says, "Now I want you to know, dear brothers and sisters, what the God in his kindness has done through the churches in Macedonia. They are being tested by many troubles, and they are very poor. But they are also filled with abundant joy, which has overflowed in rich generosity. For I can testify that they gave not out of what they could afford, but," listen to this, "far more." In other words, they didn't give out of what was a fair thing. They didn't do a budget and say, this is what we can give. They gave out of a heart that wanted to be involved. And Paul actually says to him, it says, and they did it out of their own free will. They begged us again and again for the privilege of sharing in the gift for the believers in Jerusalem. Paul was almost sort of saying, hey guys, why don't you just ease up on the giving here a bit? Because you're not as flushed as some of the other people that I deal with. But they actually said, no, Paul, we want to be part of this. We want to get in the game. We want to be involved. We want to be part of what's going on. And they actually gave out of their poverty. And then Paul finds himself talking to the Corinthians, who were very affluent. They had a lot of wealthy people in this huge church in Corinth. And he's actually saying to them, listen, he wasn't trying to shame them or put a guilt trip on them. He was actually basically saying the same thing to the Corinthians. He's saying, look, there's an opportunity here, and I want you to be able to get involved. I want you to be able to give in such a way that you get involved in what God's doing across the globe at the moment. And he's challenging their thinking. He's trying to realign their priorities, and he's creating an opportunity for them to get involved. He's encouraging them to use their position to get in the game and be involved. He says, hey guys, why don't you use your influence and your affluence to make a difference? You see, he knew that getting them involved would not only help the people that the money went to, which was the guys in Jerusalem that were coming under persecution and all sorts of things, but he knew that ultimately it was also going to help the Corinthians, because he knew that they needed the opportunity to be involved in what God is doing. And I shared with the guys this morning that wouldn't it be really amazing if a rich benefactor suddenly walked into our church? Wouldn't it be funny if this afternoon you were down at Salamanca and you ran into Bill and Melinda Gates? And you know, you're talking over a latte and bingo, suddenly Bill and Melinda give their heart to the Lord. And they come to our church and they walk in here and they're thinking, oh, this is absolutely fantastic. Well, I want to be involved in this. So anyway, I see them and I think, well, here's Bill Gates in my church. And Bill, there's a little biblical principle I want to talk to you about, and it's called tithing. And he gets a revelation of tithing and he starts to tithe into our church. And the tithe, you know, the tithe will be so massive that none of you would have to give. You could all just sit back and that'd be really cool. We could do all the things that we wanted to do. This, all the things that I'm going to share tonight that we get involved in through our miracle offering, we could do that and a whole lot more. We could go and build the new building we need to do. We could put the latest PA and production gear and camera gear, and wouldn't it absolutely be fantastic? If that happened, would we take up miracle offerings? Absolutely yes. Absolutely yes. Would we take up tithes every week? Absolutely yes. But you see, because it's about all of us together being in the game. It's about all of us having the opportunity to get involved in what God's doing across the globe at the moment. It's about us deciding. You see, why did God talk about tithing so much? Was it because he needed money? Of course it wasn't. It was because we need to give. We need to say that we don't rely on our pay packet every week. We don't rely on our careful planning. We don't rely on all those things. We need to rely on God. We need to actually move from where we are into a faith zone so that we have got something in our life that leaves God some room to work. You see, a lot of us get into financial trouble and all that sort of thing, but sometimes it can be unlucky. Sometimes things can come our way that we didn't expect. But you know how others just seem to power on and they just seem to keep making money and it's just amazing, and you think, gee, wouldn't it be nice to be them? But generally it's because they make good decisions. They plan carefully. They understand how things work. Now, there's a lot of people that can live like that without involving God in their world at all. They're just good at it. But God actually says, that's not what it's about. I want you all, regardless of whether you're one of those people or whether you're one of the ones that are just doing what it takes to get by, I want you to make room for me to work. It's much more about your position before God than it is about the possessions that you have. The second thing to get involved in the game is do what you can. Do what you can. My heart for us, my heart for you, is that we would all do what we can. So you won't be like me running around the football field trying to get in the game, trying to find out where the ball's going, trying to get in the play, that we would do what we can to get involved. See, you can't do everything. I can't do everything. We turn on the TV every night and we see massive problems. We see that over the last couple of weeks, what's happened in the Pacific, what has happened through Asia and Indonesia, it's amazing. Now those, they're not just pictures coming into our TV screens. Every single one of those people is a life and a family and somebody's life that has been turned upside down and ripped apart because tragedy has struck. Should we just sort of become numb to that and think, well, I can't do much, I can't, there's nothing I can do? That's not the way God wants us to live. What's God want us to do? He wants us to be involved. He wants us to do what we can. He doesn't want us to do what we can't. I mean, there's all sorts of things you think, why doesn't somebody, why don't they, why don't da-da-da-da-da, why don't they get this? Why don't the United Nations do da-da-da-da-da? Yeah, they might be valid thoughts and valid points, but the reality is we can all do something. And the exciting thing about a church, the exciting thing about the kingdom of God is when we do something together, we can do a whole lot. When we take what we can and we put it together, we see miracles because God multiplies that and we see all sorts of amazing things happen. See, this evening in our miracle offering, we can all get in the game. We can all be involved. We can all do what we can. We mightn't be able to all give to the same capacity, but we can all give sacrificially. In other words, some people can give, you know, what appears to you might be a lot of money, and others of us, what we're actually giving mightn't appear very much. But what we're talking about, what we want to see in this church, it's not about equal giving. It's much more about equal sacrifice. It's about all of us together making a sacrifice so that we can get involved, so that we can get in the game, so that we can make a difference, so that we can help people, so that we can see the kingdom of God come, so that we can see people in Nepal set free, so that we can see young girls across this city be educated about how important and valuable they are before they mess their lives up. That's about all of us getting involved together and seeing this place change. The third thing about getting in the game is watch your heart. Watch your heart. Proverbs 4:23 says, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. Isn't that amazing? that your heart, in other words, how you choose to feel, what you choose to take on, the offences that you choose to carry, the way that you choose to think about other people, the things that you allow to go feel in here, the things that you allow to spin around up here, they actually determine the course of your life.
Yeah.
And isn't it amazing where you meet somebody and doors just seem to open for them? You know, oh, how are you? Come in. Oh, why don't you be my PA? Oh, actually, next week you can be the vice president of the company. You know, you hear people like that, but oftentimes it's because they have chosen to have a heart that opens doors. They've chosen not to harbour bitterness. They've chosen not to harbour resentment. They've chosen not to be numb. And they've chosen to have a heart that will guide the course of their life.
Yeah.
Let's not allow our hearts to become cynical or suspicious or bitter.
Yeah.
See, in Australia, the natural thing is to have a cynical heart.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. What are you really saying? Oh, yeah, that church, they just want your money. They don't really want to help people. You know, all that sort of stuff. And we get into that so very, very easily. That whole cynical thing. Because, we do it in humorous ways so well. And you know, you get the guy, you're all sitting in the pub and you got the guy that's got the dry sense of humour and he's incredibly cynical and he makes us all laugh. But after a while, it starts to become a way of life and we start to develop a cynical heart. I would rather trust somebody and be actually ripped off and be disappointed than never trusting. Than never trusting again. See, sometimes in church life and that sort of thing, somebody needs help and somebody else will be cynical and they say, oh no, they're just taking you for a ride, da-da-da-da-da. And yeah, that goes on. But I would much rather be taken for a bit of a ride and open my heart to somebody and help somebody than having a cynical heart that never helps anybody in case somebody's there for the wrong motives or the wrong reason. Because anybody here got 100% pure motives? Gee, I'm the only one. No, only joking. None of us have got 100% pure motives. There's a bit of us and self and all sorts of things in all of us. And we've just got to realise we've got to choose to actually trust people a little bit. We've got to choose to make sure that our hearts don't become bitter. Matthew 5:18 says, but the words you speak come from the heart. That's what defiles you. In verse 19, it says, from the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, and all sexual immorality, theft, lying, and slander. Pretty full on, isn't it? Have you ever met somebody and they get in a situation and you're just having a conversation and you know sort of what's brewing down underneath in them, and you think, if they're smart, they'll keep their mouth shut. If they're smart right here in this point, they won't open up and trap off about what's going on underneath. And sooner or later, it just comes out, doesn't it? Blup. Because it's the heart. Out of the heart, the mouth speaks. You see, you can have all the self-control you like. You think, oh yeah, when I get there, I'm going to keep my mouth zipped. I'm not going to say da-da-da-da-da. But you see, if you haven't checked your heart, if you haven't guarded your heart, you won't be able to help what comes out of your mouth. Somewhere, somehow, it'll come out. It'll find a way out. If you're finding yourself continually going home and thinking, oh man, my big mouth, why did I say this? Why did I do that? Da-da. Anyone else been with me there? And it's not so much just learning to keep your mouth shut. It's about looking at what's in your heart, what actually goes on in there. The fourth thing is that we decide to use your gifts. How can I get involved in the game? How can I be involved? Decide to use your gifts. And I'm using the word gifts there in a plural sense, because we all have them. There is not a person in this room tonight that is not gifted in more than one thing. And in Romans 12, verse 8, we read this. It says, if your gift is to encourage others, what's it say? Be encouraging.
Yeah.
If your gift is giving, give generously. If God has given you the leadership ability, take that responsibility seriously. And if you have the gift of showing kindness to others, do it gladly.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about that. regardless of our gift. Regardless of whether I have the gift of encouragement. You know, I'm Mr. Super Encourager, perhaps. I don't think I am. But perhaps I have that gift, you know. And everybody I meet, you know, I just cannot help but encourage them. I'm just saying, hey, man, I love your hair today, and you're just doing so well, and all that sort of stuff that's going on. And Jen, that colour looks so good on you. And Alex, I love those gold shoes. And Pete, you've got the best haircut in the room. And all this stuff just seems to flow out of you. Some people are wired that way. They're gifted that way. It's a God-given gift. But for the rest of us who may not be, does that mean that we don't encourage people? Of course not. We can all encourage. Some people have the spiritual gift of giving. I look around and I can see people here tonight, and that's the gift that they have on their life. They do it so well. They're amazingly generous. But does that mean that you don't give? No. We can all give. Leadership. Some people are just brilliantly wired leaders. They just seem to, you know, to come out of the... They just came into this world, and all of a sudden, as soon as they could talk, they were directing people, and they were leading, and they were doing that, and they just wired that way. Are they the only people that lead? No. If you're going to be a mum or a dad or a brother or a sister or just do life, you're going to have influence. And we need to take that responsibility seriously. Yes, some people will have an amazing gift, but we're all called to do those things, yeah. And we need to do those things. Yeah. In my high school, I was sharing with the guys this morning, I'll just share this story quickly. But as I said, I loved the sport, I loved those things, and I wasn't particularly talented, and I was better at swimming than some things. And I remember at our grade 9 or 10 swimming carnival, And my house master comes over to me, and I'm warming up for the race, like Karen Perkins and doing all that, and getting psyched up and ready to go. And I was in about what they had all these different divisions. If you were one of the fast people, you know, like my natural sportsman friend, you were in Division 1. Or if you were just sort of, you know, just getting by because everybody had to contribute, you were in Division 15. That was about the sort of scope that we had. Now, in the swimming carnival, I think I was in about Division 4 or something like that. I told the guys 5 this morning. It's getting better. And, I'm getting all warmed up for the race, getting psyched up, ready to go. And my housemaster comes over to me and he says, "Dave, can you swim in Division 1? And I said, "You want me to swim the fast guys?" And they said, yeah. "Oh, that's pretty good, isn't it?" He said, "I've done the maths on it, and we're going to get more points if you come last in Division 1 than if you win Division 5. I said, "Yeah, okay." "Yeah." I said, "Yeah." I said, "I'll do that." And I came last. But it was only a 50-metre race. For the first 25, I was right there with him. But why did he come and ask me? Why did he come and ask me? He asked me because I don't know, it could have been any number of reasons, but he did know. He used to talk to me about those sorts of things. He came and asked me because he knew I was keen. He knew that I would give 100%. He knew that if I was put in that race, I would absolutely go for it. And he knew that... He knew that I would actually be keen enough to see the team get the points. He knew that I wanted to be involved. He knew that I was actually a team player and I'd be happy to do that. That's why he came and asked me. You see, we can get involved. And it's not always about taking the glory. It's not always about having all those things. It's actually about deciding that we're going to get involved. It's about deciding that whatever our gifts are, we're actually going to use them however we can to get involved, to be about the team, to be about what God's doing. You see, you can use your gifts to be involved. Number 5, how can we get involved in the game? Decide to live generously. How do you become generous? Well, you actually make a decision to live generously. You know how it starts? It doesn't start with actually, giving $100,000 away. It actually starts when you walk into a shop tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon and smiling and actually talking to the shop assistant and being interested in their world and giving them some dignity. You see, that's what it means to live a generous life. And a generous heart will speak to people in that sort of way. A generous heart will actually start to notice things. A generous heart will actually invite people in your world. It's amazing, when people visit this church, and we had a guest speaker, I remember Kim, that was here last Sunday night. And we went out with Kim afterwards and had a ball with him and some of the dancers. And he said to me, he said, "Dave, you've got such a generous church." And he wasn't looking at our weekly offering. He'd never seen that. He didn't get our vision book out and say, "Oh, look what they're doing through their miracle offering." He didn't know any of that stuff. What he was talking about was the atmosphere. What he was talking about was the way people treated him. What he was talking about was the way that people engaged and embraced and spoke to him. And that's the way that we become generous people. Out of that comes the capacity to be able to give and do all sorts of things. God's heart's always been to be generous. Deuteronomy 15 says, "Give generously to the poor, not grudgingly, for the Lord your God will bless you in everything you do." In Deuteronomy 15, 7 and 8, he says, "But if there are any poor Israelites in your towns when you arrive in the land the Lord your God has given you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted towards them. Instead, be generous and lend them whatever they need." And you see, the interesting thing about that is that, the band want to join me, please, is that was God speaking to a nation before it was even planted. And he was actually, the thing about God, if what I find really exciting, if you've got a chance to do this, if you open up the Old Testament and start to read books like Deuteronomy and the books of the law, and there's all sorts of rules and regulations in them, but what you find out is that God was interested in a society that was generous. God was interested in a society that was just. God was interested in a society where people loved one another. He was interested in a society where people valued one another, where they were treated fairly. And if you read through all those books, you find out that it was all about God wanting people to live in a just way, wanting people to treat one another properly, people to be generous. The heart of God hasn't changed. The heart of God has always been generous. And did you know that you're generous? You know that deep down you are generous. You might be looking at your last week or your last month and you think, "Well, I don't feel like I'm a very generous person." But Genesis chapter 1 in the Bible, it says, God created people in His image. In other words, the fact that you've got a capacity in you to love people. You've got a capacity in you to reach out to people. You've got something in you that wants to be generous. That didn't just happen because your mum and dad were generous. That helps. That happened because you are created in the image of God. You are created by a generous God. You're created by a creative God. You're created by a loving God. You're created by a God who wants relationship. You're created by a God who wants connection. That's why you want those things, because you are created in the image of God. If we can get God's perspective on these things and realize that it all belongs to God. The air we breathe belongs to God. The barbecue we've got in our backyard belongs to God. The money that we've got in our wallet belongs to God. Whatever we have or haven't got in our bank accounts, that actually belongs to God. And He asked us to be stewards of that. In other words, He's asked us to manage that and look after it and use it in such a way that we'll build His kingdom. Use it in such a way that we will help people. Use it in such a way that people will be blessed. Use it in such a way that this world will change. Let's sing. Can you just lead us? Stand up. One verse of this song. And then I just want to finish with the opportunity that we've got in front of us. And I want to just quickly talk through as we finish tonight some opportunities that we have to get in the game, to be involved. And this morning, I was just amazed at how generous people were, that just so many people chose to be involved in what we're doing. Our miracle offerings in this church are what we give over and above our regular tithes and offerings. In other words, Everything that's given in our miracle offerings isn't about keeping the church running. It isn't about paying the power bills. It isn't about paying wages. It isn't about any of the things that you see around here. It is about helping other people. It's about blessing people beyond ourselves. It's about seeing the gospel go out into places across this globe. It's about seeing kingdom culture come into our city. So this year already, our first miracle offering, people were extremely generous, and you guys gave $18,740, which was absolutely amazing. The second one, we did $11,610, so far that's $30,350. And we have a vision for $70,000 for the year. Now we're only halfway there in two offerings, but I believe that we can do it. I actually have faith that we can get to that vision that we've set. And it doesn't happen through a couple of people putting in a lot of money. The thing about the miracle offerings in our church recently is it's been about a lot of people being involved. It's been about a lot of people doing what they can. And it's been fantastic to see. So we can really do that. So first of all, we've got local influence. There's things that we get involved in our local community. And you got the slides there, have you, Matt? And with local influence, we've got school chaplaincy, $2,000. We've already sown money into school chaplaincy this year, and I want to sow some more into that. Bearing in mind, this is a vision. If we're not able to actually receive the money, we'll have to work out how we divvy this up. So it's not a done deal. This is a vision that we're setting. Girls' Day, $5,000. Just let me speak into that a little bit. It's not going to cost us anything like that to put on the first Girls' Day. But Alex and her team are so excited about what's happening there that we believe that the vision that God has placed on their hearts isn't just for what happens in this church. We want to develop curriculum, we want to develop teaching, and we want to develop a whole lot of things that could go way beyond this place. We just got a feeling that God's asked us to do something there, and we're in the process of putting that together now. So whatever we raise over and above putting on the first Girls' Day, we're going to put that into developing a curriculum for the future that's going to go beyond this place. And Girls' Day is about girls 7 to 11, isn't it, Al? And did you know that is the age where girls now are really making decisions and taking on values that are setting the course for the rest of their life? And we want to actually teach them their value right in that time of life before things happen when it's too late, when they have to spend the rest of their life getting counselling for something that happened when they were 13. And we really want to see that change. So we're going to sow money into that. LifeLinks, $2,000, and we give out food parcels all the time here, and most of that comes out of general, but we want to sow some extra into that. Youth and kids, $6,000, and the kids team are really excited. Next year they're talking about running buses into various suburbs around our community and getting kids into kids' church and just getting them in the atmosphere where they can meet Jesus. Isn't that exciting? So we want to sow some money into that. State influence, Church Together was a fantastic event. We've already sowed $3,000 into that. Impact Conference, we're visioned $20,000 for that. We actually probably won't need $20,000 for that because people have been incredibly generous. But I want us to be able to seed money so that we can continue to do kingdom things in the future and we can continue to do the things that God's calling us to do. Live Free Tassie, $10,000. We've sown money into that already, but we want to sow more into Live Free. They're doing a fantastic job up there. World Influence. We're sponsoring something like 18 church planters across Nepal and India. So $18,000 into planting churches in Nepal. This is young men and young women, just like you guys, just like a lot of you guys, and like that one over there, yeah. And they're just turning their lives around and going out and planting churches all across Nepal. It's absolutely amazing to see. And we can just sow some money in and support them and keep them doing that. Church planters in India, $4,000. So it's an amazing opportunity to be involved, to get in the game. Can I have one of those giving slips, please, Dan? Thanks, Al. On your seat, you'll all have one of these. And tonight, don't just think, oh, well, I'm not in a position to be able to get involved in this. I can't give much, so I'm not going to do anything. It's not about equal giving. Really, it is about equal sacrifice. And I encourage you, even for you, you might only be able to put $1 in. That might actually be big for you this week, to put $1 in. But I encourage you, take a step. Decide you're going to make that sacrifice. Decide that you're going to be part of the miracle. You see, we can all be in this together. So what we do is in a minute, we just, and a lot of people here have probably given this morning, but we actually just come up and we put these in those cylinders on either side there. And it's not about saying, hey, look at me, I'm getting involved. It's just about being proactive. It's about saying, hey, I want to be part of this. And I'm going to get up out of my seat and I'm going to walk forward and say, I'm going to be involved in this. So why don't you fill in your name and details. And if you give best by credit card, if you do that in a responsible way, by all means, use your credit card. You've got the option to give that amount over the next 10 weeks in weekly installments. You just tick that box. Or if you want to make a single payment, if you're going to write a check out tonight or just put your credit card details on there, just tick that box. And yes, we do take cash too. You can tick that on there and put your cash in this and put it in. Or over the next 10 weeks, we've got giving slips in our seats. And if you write your amount on there and you're going to give that over the next 10 weeks, what you just need to come to church, put that money in that envelope and write on it, miracle offering, and all that money will certainly go to doing those projects that we've been talking about that is beyond us. So why don't you decide to get involved? Imagine what we can achieve when we all get involved together. Tonight, in just a moment, I'll give you the opportunity to do that. The band are going to play. But I want to ask you one question first about getting involved, about being in the game. The best way to be in the game of life that I'm talking about is to say yes to Jesus. Is to say, yes, Jesus, I want to be involved. Yes, Jesus, I thank you that you died for me. Yes, Jesus, I thank you that you love me. Yes, Jesus, I thank you that you created me in the image of a loving, creative, wonderful God. Yes, Jesus, I thank you that you know all about me. And yes, Jesus, tonight I choose to follow you. That's actually the hard bit. Sometimes the easy bit is saying, yes, I thank you that you love me, Jesus. Yes, Jesus, I thank you that you died for me. Often the hard bit is saying, yes, Jesus, I'm going to make a decision to follow you. I'm going to make a decision to turn around. And the Bible uses a word for that that we call repent. It means to decide that the direction that I've been going in my life is not the direction that God wants me to go. Understanding that actually hurts the heart of God. And saying, tonight I'm going to choose to turn around and follow God. And if you would be really bold and say, yes, Jesus, I'm going to follow you. Yes, Jesus, I thank you that you died for me. Yes, Jesus, come into my heart right now. A miracle can happen in your life tonight. You can get involved. You can be part of this game of life. And it's not a game, I know, but I'm using that analogy. You can be part of life in an amazing way. So we just bow our heads, close our eyes just for a moment. Is there anybody tonight that needs to say, yes, Jesus? Yes, Jesus. And if you would say, yes, Jesus, thank you that you died for me. Yes, Jesus, I choose to follow you. Yes, Jesus, come into my heart right now. I commit my life totally to you, and I'm going to follow you for the rest of my life. If you would be big enough and brave enough and bold enough to do that tonight, why don't you just slip your hand up and say, hey, Dave, I'm making that decision tonight. Just while no one's looking around, just slip your hand up quickly and say, hey, that's me. I'm going to make that decision tonight. Maybe you've done that once, you've prayed a prayer like that perhaps, but you know you're not close to God tonight. Why don't you make tonight the night that you say yes to Jesus, whether it's to actually come back to him when you haven't been close for a while, or whether it's for the first time to say, yes, Jesus, I need you. If that's you, just slip your hand up quickly and say, hey, Dave, that's me. I want to do that tonight.